Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Suzanne Hogan. The term parenting our parents can seem degrading to our elders, infantilizing them in some way and dismissing their abilities. But that can be how it feels to a lot of baby boomers who are now in what seems a reversed role, caring for their parents and managing their medical and financial needs. Aging is a part of life, and today on the show, a conversation on how to address some of the harder realities that can companion that fact in a productive, positive way, together as a family. We'll discuss the best ways to protect the social, emotional, and physical needs of aging parents who need assistance and of those who support and care for them. Plus, we'll explore the best ways to plan for later in life care from a legal standpoint, how to protect the rights and assets of all parties to make aging more enjoyable and less of a legal hassle that can burden families. Stay with us for Central Standard on KCUR just after this hour's news. Welcome to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Suzanne Hogan. Good morning. People worldwide are living longer. As we age, we can start to lose a lot of abilities that we once had: eyesight, memory, mobility. And it can get to a point when outside support is needed to ensure quality of day-to-day life. But to ensure that quality can prove to be challenging. A lot of baby boomers are now finding themselves in what seemed to be a reversed role, with new responsibilities, caring for their parents, and assisting in managing medical and financial decisions. It can be an emotionally demanding process for all parties involved. It requires a lot of care, patience, and understanding of some pretty complicated things, like legal rights, how to navigate the medical field, insurance policies, and how to best resolve some interpersonal family conflicts that can complicate the decision-making process. Today's theme, supporting our seniors, finding solutions for families and adult children who are taking on more responsibilities to care for their aging parents. Joining us in studio, Deborah Smith, Associate Professor of Sociology at UMKC. She's the Director of the Family Studies Program. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Let's start first by describing the best ways of evaluating an aging parent situation, understanding the activities of daily living.
Activities of daily living, there are two levels. One is very direct personal care, like getting out of the bed, toileting, eating, all of those sorts of things. And when someone really needs a help with a lot of those, that's really the time when you need to think about what sort of direct support you're going to be able to provide somebody, having somebody come in or moving to an assisted living program or something like that. The other is a little bit further back, but still very necessary in the United States to be able to function using the telephone, using transportation, handling finances, those sorts of things. And that's the kind of thing that it might be possible for elderly to stay in their homes, which they overwhelmingly prefer to do rather than moving out of their home. And that's how children can help a lot in terms of helping with those, they call it instrumental activities of daily living.
Right. The instrumental activities of daily living are different in this. What's the major difference between the instrumental activities and the regular activities?
Activities of daily living is about like how a human being has to take care of themselves, eating, toileting, getting out of bed, walking a few blocks, that kind of thing. But the instrumental are the ones that are more for a complex society, like using the telephone, being able to get around with transportation. So those things that you really do need to do in the United States, but it's not like you can sort of get along if you're at home, but you don't want to be isolated. And so those instrumental activities of daily living are very important to help people sort of stay integrated in the society.
So what is the best way for a family member to start to evaluate these things?
I think what I wrote down was like just start talking. That's critical. Communication is critical. And in any sort of familial relationship, if you can talk about everything, then you can talk about anything. So it's very important to start talking about what are the parents' wishes. What tends to happen is that adult children start to infantilize their elderly parents, meaning like acting as if they don't have the agency to make a lot of decisions. Children want to make sure that the parents are okay. They focus more, the adult children focus more on medical issues and financial issues when maybe what the elderly parents care about is staying in their home, making sure that they can, you know, continue to go see their friends on a weekly basis, et cetera. So you need to talk to your elderly parents about what do they care about rather than you assuming that they know you know, assuming that you know what's best for them.
It can be kind of a fine line of knowing when to have this conversation or intervene, and it can kind of come across as insensitive to a parent's privacy in some ways during this time. What's the best way of dealing with that?
Again, I think it's just you have to start the conversations. It's sort of as you're an adult child, you do have to shift your role with your parent, but your parent is always going to be your parent. I mean, there's no way to kind of get around that. So the adult child needs to just sort of start acting like that person is like a business associate. Like, how would you want to be treated? And not just assuming. And also, there's that issue of handling sort of maybe some longstanding issues. And it's not necessarily you're going to have to like sit down and like have therapy about it. It's more about just sort of starting to talk about, hey, you know, wow, it seems like the house hasn't been cleaned for a while. Do you need some help with that? Another issue to bring up very much so is siblings, because siblings need to be involved with all of this. Typically, one sibling typically gets stuck. And they feel very resentful. And so it's a matter of the siblings maybe having conversations prior to talking to the parents. You need to be careful about feeling like they're being ganged up upon. But siblings need to start talking a little bit. And that might be a way to ease in to the conversation with the parent.
And we're going to talk a lot more about that a little bit later on. But I also want to ask you, in what ways has society changed in how it handles aging and caring for the elderly? Like, what trends are we seeing now that maybe are different from, say, 50 years ago?
50 years ago is that people were dead. That's the easy one to say. That one of my favorite anecdotes is that these two parents were very concerned about their child, that they couldn't get in touch with him, and they were putting in, like, missing person reports, and the parents, aged 101 and 103, were worried about their child, 75. And so the issue is that we're seeing people living longer, and these you have a situation where maybe a 60-year-old is taking care of a 90-year-old, and 50 years ago you would consider the 60-year-old the old person. So we really are with this increased lifespan, and people aged 85 and older is the fastest growing group of people in the United States and also the world, that you really are thinking about, you know, 40 might not be middle age. It might be 50. That's your middle age. So our idea of when things are supposed to happen has changed. And you've heard the, you know, 50 is the new 30. And that is part of that trend.
I want to bring in two other guests to join the conversation. They've been waiting here patiently. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Today's topic, when adult children start to take on more supporting roles for their parents. Joining us with Deborah Smith of UMKC's Associate Professor of Sociology at UMKC, Dr. John Didon of Truman Medical Center. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Samantha Shepard, an attorney of elder law at Shepard Elder Law Group.
Good morning. Thank you for having me also.
Dr. John Didon, we've been talking about this transition from when seniors start to need outside help from their children. What are the most common concerns or questions you hear from seniors when they come to Truman Lakewood for support?
Well, the most common concern that we see is their fear of their loss of autonomy and having to leave their home. And as Dr. Smith aptly pointed out a second ago, it's a delicate balance between the concern of the child, the adult child, for the parent and the elderly parent's desire to maintain their independence. And it's sometimes a little difficult to break the traditional parent-child relationship and come into maybe a reverse role. So the most common concern I see of older people is that they're going to lose their autonomy, lose their independence through the well-meaning efforts of others to protect them. And so the main desire of the older person that I see is to maintain basically their status quo, maintain their autonomy, their independence, their ability to function in society.
In what ways are you seeing assisted living places trying to incorporate that within their facilities? I mean, you hear about things like pet programs or having youth come in and kind of making, sure, having salons, having things that make it feel more like regular life.
I mean, that's right. Many long-term care facilities or assisted living facilities adhere to a principle called the Eden Alternative. This is a program that started in upstate New York many years ago under the tutelage of Dr. Bill Thomas. And, for instance, we've adopted that at the Truman Lakewood Long-Term Care Facility. The point of the Eden Alternative is trying to make an institution of living more home-like through the introduction of multiple species and multiple generations of humans. So, for instance, at the nursing home at Truman Lakewood, which is where I take care of patients and teach in my role in the UMKC School of Medicine, I have observed great benefit from the intergenerational program and the use of multiple species. We have saltwater fish tanks and aviaries and birds that ride on people's shoulders and nursing home dogs that live there and visit. And we've had nursing home bunnies and iguanas and gerbils. And also, a number of years ago in the late 90s, the long-term care administration, with a little input from yours truly, went to a very beneficial local philanthropic organization, the Nettleton Foundation. And they gave us a grant to fund our youth program. So we hired an administrator and his assistant. And since then, Truman has picked it up as an ongoing program. Nettleton is still very, very beneficial, bought us a new van a couple years ago. But each day, the group brings in little children of varying ages to interact with the older people in the nursing home in a grandparent-grandchild type interaction. And they'll do simple songs, games, light exercise. Sometimes they'll do sophisticated programs. We've had intergenerational art programs. And so that's very beneficial. And as a spinoff, actually, we've started a Montessori preschool that is physically contiguous with our Alzheimer's unit so that the older people in the Alzheimer's unit can have a daily interaction with the children who are the children of the nurses, administrators, and doctors there at Truman Lakewood. And
that's great.
So the intergenerational interaction is very beneficial. So I strongly support that. And many, many places have that.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We'd like to invite you to join the conversation. You can call in at 816-235-2888. Are you experiencing this change in your family, seniors or caretakers? We want to hear your stories and share advice. Also, Samantha Shepherd of Shepherd Elder Law Group, what kind of conversations concerning legal matters should parents and children have with one another as they start to consider this shift in responsibilities?
Well, that's a good one. What questions or conversations should they have? I agree with Deborah. It's terribly challenging to open the door to the conversations. I tend to make jokes about sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner and saying, "So, Mom, Dad, can I have the keys to your safe deposit box? And who did you name in the will? And by the way, I don't like my sibling. Do you know that he's got gambling problems and his wife is a money grabber?" You know, how do you introduce these topics? There's no class in law school that equips me to answer that. So I can just tell you, there is no right time to start. Please don't wait till the crisis. We get most of our work from crisis. Mom's fallen, broken her hip. She's gone to see Dr. Didon. We don't know what she has. Does she have 10 cents or 10 million? She's a very close to the chest sort of private gal, and we didn't think it was any of our business. Well, it is your business to know where to start, not to take over, not to say, to be patronizing, as you said that lovely word I can't recall, Deborah, that says basically we're the smart ones now, you have gray hair, you're stupid, but more to say we care, and when you're ready to share, we want to listen.
816-235-2888, that's 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, or post your experience and insights on Facebook. We're tweeting at KCURCST. As far as financial managing is concerned, should there be a point person that's in charge, or is it kind of a responsibility that can be shared across siblings? We kind of talked about that earlier, but sometimes interpersonal conflicts between siblings can make more of a hassle than maybe is healthy.
You are singing my song. There should be a point person. And you know who it is? It's my client. It's the senior. We are so quick to jump to say, Mom and Dad don't have capacity. So, yes, there should be. Mom and Dad should be gently encouraged to get their affairs in order or to consider that it's time to pass on some information. And when that time comes that mom and dad aren't able to make all the decisions, ideally you have a unified family. You know, I live in Pollyanna land. Does that happen? Do siblings always get along? No. And when mom first has something go wrong, is that first when the sibling rivalries come out? Holy moly, yes. There'll be work for therapists all over town. How can I say? At 10,000 people turning 65 a day, this is everybody's problem. This shouldn't be a once-a-year show. This should be a once-a-week conversation.
Absolutely. I think it's important to remember just the historical time period that the elderly parents that are dealing with this right now are sort of the silent generation. They went through the depression. They are sort of pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They don't need any help. I mean, so that sometimes they can be very close to their chest because they feel like I've gotten through all of these hardships in my life, so I don't need any help. And then the kids are the baby boomers who are sort of the me generation and, you know, what's in it for me and that sort of thing. I mean, obviously, these are very broad stereotypes, but I think it's important to remember the actual historical group that we're talking about, taking the keys from away from the car. That is huge. And this was the group of people that was the first ones that were able to own their own cars. And so taking the keys away is really, really big, not just because you're concerned about them, you know, hitting the gas pedal instead of the brake and going into the the glass front window. It's more about this was their autonomy. This was the way that they could manage the world. So taking that away is very, very big. And that's when you have to start talking. I know I really literally know people who would park their car behind their parents' car so they couldn't get out. Other ones like taking the distributor cap off so the kid, you know, so they are trying to handle the situation without doing it directly.
Kind of passively. And what's the danger in that?
Well, you're going to upset a lot of people.
Oh, I can give you one from yesterday. So the lady says to me, and I promise I'll say no names. She said, and I don't know cars from bicycles, the fuse. Apparently, if a fuse is missing, something will break, right? Mm-hmm. So she said that the son-in-law had taken a fuse out, but it wasn't the one that wouldn't make it start. It was the one that distributed fuel. So when she looked out and saw he was gone, she called the guy who knew about cars and said, the car's gone. And she said, you better get in the car and find him. He's going to run out of gas somewhere. And he ran out of gas on 4:35. So is that what you want?
No.
I can't judge. I certainly don't know what it's like. And I'm all for disabling vehicles. But make sure you stop it from moving.
Dr. Dito?
Well, this is actually a huge issue. And there are even national conferences on the issue of driving in the elderly. Driving is so important to maintaining a person's independence and their sense of autonomy. And not to be stereotypical, but the groups that have the highest rates of accidents are teenagers and older people.
Yeah.
So people are rightfully concerned. I would say this, just absolutely taking away somebody's right to drive is a little severe. There's ways, I think, that we can maybe more gently protect the older person and the public. We have an obligation to protect the public.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions on how to...
Well, older people have, as they age, maybe problems with vision. And night driving is a little more difficult. Also, when we drive during the day, whether we think of it or not, we use familiar visual cues to guide us driving. We don't necessarily, every time we get in the car, do a little, you know, Google map in our brain on the way to the grocery store. We know all the visual cues to get to the grocery store. Well, at night, those visual cues aren't there. So maybe older people who are having a little trouble should limit themselves to daytime driving. And that's a classic strategy. Maybe limit themselves to driving to local things that they would know better from historical visits.
And I know people that arrange their day so they only have to make right-hand turns rather than left-hand turns. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is about, honoring the autonomy of the older person who is stopping driving at night, who is not going on the interstates, who are making sure that they're not doing dangerous things on it. So again, it's you might, as the child, sort of look to see what are your parents doing. Do you hear them say, "Well, can you drive me? Because it's at night." You need to be able to pick up the cues, because that might be the place to start having the conversations. So it's about communicating, and it's about good listening skills as well.
I'd like to bring in Dawn into the conversation. She called 816-235-2888. Dawn, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you for having me. I work with Jewish Family Services, and I'm listening to all of the wonderful things that people are talking about, and just wanting people and your listeners to know that there are alternatives and there are programs out in the community that would help with the loss of autonomy and leaving people's homes. We have a volunteer driver program, and there are other volunteer driver programs in the community that allow older adults to actually access volunteers in the community, so that they are the ones who are making their appointments, and they're the ones who are getting to where they need to go. A lot of them are very low cost. Our program is $5 each way. We wind up having wonderful relationships that are formed with our drivers and riders. And so it does allow the older adult to maintain their own self-respect and their autonomy, because there are programs that are allowing them to do that. So I was just listening to one of your guests talking about taking the keys away, and yes, that is a very, very uncomfortable conversation to have, but there are different programs out in the community that would allow older adults to maintain their dignity without having to only depend on their families.
Dawn, thanks so much for sharing those resources with us.
Not a problem.
I think it's wonderful that you called in to let people know that, yes, the older person can take advantage of some of the things that is offered, but then they can give back. They can volunteer for Jewish Family Services. They can volunteer. And so that social integration, that's sort of the sociological term is social integration. You want to keep people involved. So that's why that Montessori school is so critical.
I want to say that really resonates with me. Yesterday, and everything seems to happen yesterday, I feel like every person who is an elder law attorney has so many yesterday stories, but this is a really true one. Yesterday, a lady who I would tell you her name if I had her permission, she's 80 years old, beautiful skin, pink cheeks, happy, coming to see me about her husband, what should we do about X, Y, and Z scenario. She has given over 5,000 hours in the last 8 years at Children's Mercy in the Ronald McDonald House, and it's keeping her vibrant. She said she retired and stayed a number of years home and did gardening, etc., and then thought, okay, I need to be with it. I need to be engaged. And she's just bouncing with life. It reminds me, I don't know, another resource, if you already know about this one, is the Shepherd Centers. The same idea. The more we keep the aging engaged, the happier we are and the less depression we suffer from.
Yeah, I agree. People, as they go through life, they set these arbitrary goals. Oh, I'm going to retire at age 55. I'm going to retire at age 62. And then they retire and suddenly they experience loss of their role in life, loss of their job satisfaction, loss of what to do with their day. And I am a firm believer that, retired or not, you need to keep doing something, keep working at something. And older people have a lot of accumulated knowledge that they can use, especially in the volunteer area. So that's very good advice that you guys
bring. And the volunteering allows the older person to focus on what they love. Like when my dad, he was an administrator and a bench scientist, and he loved the science and he hated the administration. So when he got to retire, he did some consulting where he got to do just the science. And so it's the sociological term is role salience, like what do you care the most about? And then when you're older, you get the opportunity to focus on those things. And retirement is what I study quite a bit. And this actually is happening to the adult children right now, but people say, oh, I'm going to retire, and then they retire, then they take the trip that they were planning for all their lives, and then there's like 2 years actually where they're like, I'm going to do all those things, and then after the 2 years, you're like, oh, I'm going to be around for maybe another 20 or 30 years, so now what should I do? And that's the opportunity to sort of reintegrate yourself in a different role and have the opportunity, like maybe – you know, when I was working, was on the board of something, and now I want to be able to travel when I want to, so I'm not going to be on the board as my volunteering, but I'm going to help for the auction night or those sorts of things. So people are staying socially integrated. They're just changing the way that they're doing it. And again, as the children need to support that as much as possible.
Go ahead.
Even in the nursing home, my happiest patients are the patients who get to do volunteer activities in the nursing home, delivering the mail, helping with children, things like that.
I have a client who has Alzheimer's, which seems like a goodly 75% of my clients do, but perhaps I do and I've forgotten. She has been going to a daycare every day where she thinks she's volunteering, and that keeps her happy.
I want to kind of switch gears a little bit to talk a little bit more about some of the guilt that adult children face when starting to understand whether or not it's appropriate to intervene in these ways and sometimes kind of overlooking how sick their parent truly is. Sometimes things go unnoticed for a long time and then an accident happens or something happens that makes everyone have to address it all at once. And then they're left with kind of a feeling of guilt that maybe they shouldn't have done something earlier. And I'm just wondering if there's any advice on how to best kind of manage that within ourselves.
Oh, they're pointing at me. That means I'm supposed to talk. If I could have my wish, each family, whether it's just the mum and dad, each family would sit down and they would have a list of everything that they own, how it's titled, who's the beneficiary.
That'd be real nice.
Okay, come on. You said I could have my wish. And I would like every single one of them to have, more important than anything else probably, would be a health care power of attorney. And I'll use this as a plug for National Healthcare Decisions Day. It's April 16th. I think this is the fifth or the sixth year that it's started out nationwide. And we have a baby growth here in Kansas City where last year it was at Kansas City Hospice and community members invited in, notaries sitting around the table, the bioethics double-sided form there, which I believe should be at the Department of Motor Vehicles given to everyone at age 18. Who do you want to be your decision maker in the event that you're not able to make decisions for yourself? And then on the reverse side, which I'm less inclined personally, following John Kerry, who's a Kansas City guru on this, I tend to not want anything on there at all. I'd rather say, just give me a person. I don't want to say yes or no to this particular thing. I want that smart person. And in my family, my husband makes a joke that he's going to stuff me and put me on the couch. So I'm really disinclined to have him be my decision maker. I don't trust that he'll make the right call. I want my sister, who's the med student, to say, okay, doctor, what's her life going to look like? What should we do with her? But I don't want to have made the decision at 43 or 33, which I really am, right, of I don't want IV antibiotics or I don't want this. I want a human whom I trust to get in there and ask the questions I would ask.
So are you talking about establishing a power of attorney?
Like, absolutely.
So you think that can kind of change as we age, as who we might consider to be the person as the go-to. That might change over 15, 20 years.
That should change every probably 3 to 5. And you know what you can do with it? You can shred it because it's only as good as the paper.
So it is that easy to change these these documents.
And these are just things to start talking about. You know, another thing I just want to bring up real briefly is that this is really a woman's issue because women are the ones that are going to be living longer. And what usually happens is wife takes care of husband, husband dies, daughter takes care of mom. That's usually the way that it works because women live longer. So that's just kind of something to keep in mind. Like if you're going to choose somebody, maybe choose a woman because she's going to be around longer.
Are there certain qualities that you should look for in a person when deciding on who should have power of attorney?
That is just a it's somebody that you trust. I think that's the critical aspect, is that do you trust them? My sister is a medical doctor, so and I would always joke with my parents, you know, 70, you're in a nursing home, and you know, and they're in their late 70s now. But certainly she's the go-to person when it comes to that sort of stuff.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation on the challenging transition of providing care for one's parents. We'd like for you to call in with your experience and share your advice, 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll return in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Suzanne Hogan. Today's topic, when adult children start to take on a more supporting role for their parents, understanding the best way to ensure quality of life for our seniors, offering advice to caretakers and adult children who are taking on these new responsibilities. Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to share your experience or ask questions. Today I'm joined with Deborah Smith, Associate Professor of Sociology at UMKC. She's the Director of the Family Studies Program. Dr. John Didon, Program Director of the UMKC School of Medicine Geriatric Medicine Fellowship, and Samantha L. Shepherd, an attorney for Shepherd Elder Law Group. Thank you all for joining me this morning.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So this is an area of interest that you all have dedicated a large portion of your life's work and passion towards, and I'm wondering if we can quickly go around the table and share some of the reasons for first getting into this area of work.
This is usually what happens with research, is you back into it. I was very interested in couple decision-making, husbands and wives. And then when I got to my dissertation time, my advisor got a very large grant from the National Institute on Aging. So my dissertation was on a couple influence on the retirement decision. But I was able to really get into it because my parents were getting to that point, and their friends in church, et cetera, were getting to that point. And actually, with the aging of the population, this is a really important thing to think about. And certainly, when you look at the aging literature, a whole full third of it is on caregiving. I mean, this is huge, because not only is it about people who are older who need care, but people who are older are the ones giving care. So as we think about how do we help each other and staying socially integrated, or should they, you know, go to assisted living, those sorts of things. It's just, I'm really interested in how people make decisions. And so this is a really good thing. And it's hard, you know, I would just, my biggest thing is just start asking questions, start listening to your parents, start just, you have to start somewhere. And, you know, you were saying that you didn't want to be the crisis manager. Ms. Schiffer said that. But that tends to be what happens. And I think what you're doing today is great, because what we want to say is start talking before the crisis.
Dr. John Didon?
Well, my interest in geriatrics was kind of embryonic in my medical school. I did some rotations with people who were caring for elderly people, and in the nursing home, in fact. And I thought that there was kind of a mismatch between their intellectual approach to the complex needs of the elderly. And I like complex intellectual problems, and the elderly have a lot of interacting chronic and acute diseases. I also like pharmacology, and there is a lot of pharmacology involved. Also, I like old people, not to be too simple about it. And they're a very appreciative population. They know we can't always cure everything, but we can care about them. And also, I feel a bit of a pioneer, because geriatric medicine has been a relatively new subspecialty of medicine, and it's grossly underserved. So I feel that by teaching the fellows and the residents and the students, we're kind of amplifying the knowledge that we have. And so it's very rewarding. I like it.
Samantha Shepherd?
I only have 10 minutes on this one, right? Just kidding. I was attending law school in Boston, went to Boston College, found myself plonked in the middle of the country at one point, scratching my head, saying, how did I ever get here? And had been, you know, went to law school thinking I would help people, and that is not really the reality for most lawyers. You've met them, haven't you? And I went back to UMKC, actually, to get a postgraduate law degree and in trusts and estates. And I met a guest speaker whose name is Craig Reeves, and I thought, I have just drank the Kool-Aid. I am a believer. He's helping people. He's fantastic. What a great thing that these people who help the elderly are. What is this elder law? There was not a class in it. I'm not that old, really. But in 1991, I don't know if there's one now, but there wasn't one then. And it really felt like, well, here's the time in my life where I can do what I want to do, help the people I want to help. So what elder law is not just the elderly, but it's also those with special needs, which speaks to my heart as well. I can help children. I will have a little plug here for NALA. It's a horrible sounding word, I'll give you that. NAELA. It's the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. And that is a small but robust group. And that group has fostered me. I have a mentor, Bill Hubbard. I call with all my silly questions. Terribly embarrassing. He doesn't mind at all. He's probably listening, snortling right now. I asked him to come and hold my hand. He made fun of me. But I would say we've got 100 people deep now in Missouri and about 25 in Kansas that are members of this group. It's a close-knit group, very supportive, very willing to help, and they're a different breed of lawyers. They're all willing to be quasi-social workers because you have to be a listener. Mm-hmm. And there aren't answers that are black and white to a lot of these questions. And I feel like I've found my calling and my passion.
We're going to answer your questions at 816-235-2888. Kevin in Kansas City, Kansas, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello, thanks for having me. What an interesting topic, and guests are so eloquent. So what I was going to bring up was when my parents were elderly, and my sister stepped up. I have three sisters and a brother, and we were all kind of like, who's going to handle this? And, you know, my sister did, and it's almost like she put her life on hold for quite a number of years, and she made sure my parents had the...
Kevin, are you still with us? Oh, I think we may have lost him. That's too bad. But I think we know where he was going with that. You know, a sibling steps up and really makes sure that their parents enjoy the life to their fullest to the end.
And sometimes it's to the detriment of the caregiver. There's a lot of research that shows women, they might retire earlier, so they have less of a pension because they're retiring to take care of their husband or retiring to take care of their parents. And I just want to... say something that Samantha Shepherd said was, it's nothing is black and white. That's the issue here. It's so complex. It's just life. And sometimes it's really easy to just continue on with your life without thinking about it. But when the crisis happens, then you have to stop and think. So our mantra for me today is just do it before the crisis. And everything is gray. And you just have to decide to be the adult here.
Well, and as more and more families aren't living in the same city as one another, mm-hmm. there's a lot of geographic distance here. I mean, what is the best way to try to kind of nip this before it becomes a huge problem?
Kevin commented on his sister putting her life on hold, and that's something that many, if not the majority of people, are going to face as mm-hmm. they think they're going to have a retirement and they suddenly become caregivers. A significant segment of America has caregiving roles, both for those older than themselves and those younger than themselves. And this can be a real stressor. Caregiver stress is a huge issue. And oftentimes, when the caregiver becomes too stressed, that's unfortunately when the older person gets institutionalized. Caregiver stress, it doesn't have any socioeconomic boundaries. I mean, look at Sandra Day O'Connor, one of the smartest, most highly educated women ever, Supreme Court Justice, had to retire to take care of her husband with Alzheimer's disease. Now, there's some caregiver stress for you. Try being a Supreme Court Justice and caring for an Alzheimer's patient at the same time. So I think the more we can do to support caregivers by sharing the burden among SIBs or using community resources like adult daycare, things like that, you're going to promote relief of caregiver stress. But the first thing to do is recognize it.
Well, and then I also want to ask, I mean, there's a lot of different options here. There's long-term care, having a caregiver, assisted living, nursing homes, and they're all kind of different. How do you determine what is the best fit for your loved one?
Well, they're also all expensive. Mm-hmm. That's the big issue. If you, we have in our society what's called a structural lag, as in what's happening in our society. Our institutions haven't caught up with it. Like, you can take, you know, medical and family leave for an adoption, but, you know, just they're going to have to rejig it. So, okay, now you can do it to take care of an elderly family member. Part of the reason why the caregiver stress is so prevalent is because of the cost, both emotionally and financially. And so that's where that stress is coming from. And again, sort of sharing the burden. You had mentioned about geographic. Sometimes it's not geographic. Who, you know, maybe it's, oh, well, this SIB is the closest, so she'll take care of it, but not necessarily.
Samantha?
There is a broad spectrum that we don't know about until we're in the middle of it. We don't know the difference between an independent living and assisted living. What are the resources for home care? What does that even mean? What's a geriatric care manager? I'd send you to Google that, because you brought up the pivotal point that I see often. I'm getting internet search people calling their daughter in California, and I heard somebody else, I'm going to parrot this, they called them the pigeons. They fly in, poop all over everything and leave. And I thought, what a fantastic idea. They want to fix it from afar, but they're not the gal who's there 30 hours a day realizing how much care mom needs, changing her clothes, buying the Depends, about to be on a breakdown. It ends up, elder law ends up being planning for the money and planning for the placement. But I would implore you as children to become educated about your options. Learn about, go, as in walk in. What does a nursing home look like? And Dr. Didon's one's lovely because he's actually there. And he's got this little bevy of little doctors following behind him, training. Fantastic. And that's Truman Lakewood. So go and have a look at that. But then there's this continuing care retirement community concept where you get everything in one building. It's not for everyone, because nobody wants to be in the nursing home. So you go to the place and they say, look, here's the independent side, lots of social activities. Here's the assisted living when you really need a bit of help. And here's the nursing home in the basement that you'll never go to. And yeah, Dr. Dillon's making these. Yeah, he knows it. Nobody wants to be there.
Well, and there's different types of facilities, all different types of institutions. And how do we determine which is the best? And how are we determining which has the best quality of care? There's a lot of tools now on the internet, I know. I don't have it in front of me. KCABC.org, the Kansas Advocates for Better Care. But so
talking to your adult parent, though, I mean, that's the thing, mm-hmm. is that how do we decide? We don't decide. The idea is to let the older person decide what is the best. And you have to honor their wishes. You can't, the term is infantilize, like being an infant. You can't take that on because they are an autonomous human being. That's, you know, like elder abuse and child abuse, there's very different things that happen at the state level because you're assuming that the elder is an autonomous being. So yeah. You have to honor their agency.
Yes. The older person should stay in their home as long as possible. I'll tell you a little story. Got time for a story?
Sure, a quick one.
Okay. So I had an older lady come to me in geriatric assessment clinic about 20 years ago at Truman Lakewood, UMKC. And she'd been living at home in St. Louis for about 50 years, same home. Started falling, getting more confused. Her husband passed away. Family became concerned. So she went to her local provider, and he said, I can't help you. You're just getting older. So they had to take her out of her home, put her in assisted living. She got more confused and weaker, moved her to Kansas City. We're going to put her in the nursing home. We just checked her blood test for thyroid function. She was grossly hypothyroid. Gave her a pill, and she was back to good again. And ageism, unfortunately, kept her from getting the proper medical care. And we have to make sure that we're not ageist as we look at our parents. We have to think of them as individuals and try to optimize their quality of life, hopefully at home.
Samantha, quickly.
Yeah, there is a point there that I want to focus on, and I think it's a pervasive misunderstanding in our culture and often in the doctor's hands as well. Just because you have Alzheimer's, just because you have dementia, just because you're old does not mean that you have lost your decisional capacity. So I get this, well, she can't sign a power of attorney. Well, really? Really? Just because she has a label?
Right.
And that seems to be a common frustration among seniors. They start to just become identified as perhaps what their disease is and not so much as an individual anymore.
Right. That's right.
I want to get more into financing options for care before we run out of time because we only have about 10 minutes left. Medicaid is a state federal funded program for low-income individuals. And I was surprised to learn that Medicaid provides health coverage to more than 4.6 million low-income seniors, nearly all of whom also are enrolled in Medicare. So what are the options here for financing long-term care? I mean, there's, you know, long-term insurance, but that can also be kind of a tricky thing to navigate. I'm wondering, Samantha Shepherd, can you spell this out in any type of clear, easy-to-understand way as a first step for people
Absolutely.
To start to make these decisions
Absolutely.
On how to finance
Thank
this?
You for asking. The first question I always ask is there long-term care insurance? Because often no one knows. It's been dusted off. I'd say percentage-wise, it's not even a number. Very few have it, but you need to know. The second idea that people have is Medicare will pay. Well, that's not true either. Medicare will pay if you've had typically a hospitalization of 72 hours, and then you'll get rehab for up to 100 days, and that has all kinds of little caveats that we could talk about forever. But we go to that. And then private pay, which is obviously some in the Missouri area, the state average is about $5,500. In our local metro area, you're in the $7,000 range per month. And veterans benefits is another option, very largely underutilized. Lots of bad players in the game. Make sure you're talking to an attorney who's accredited, please. It can provide up to $2,000 tax-free income to pay towards a home care, assisted living, or the nursing home. And then the bottom line, the absolutely nobody wants it, is Medicaid. In Missouri, an individual can have $1,000 to their name. There's some exempt things, and there's a process that's somewhat different for the married individuals, but it is an option.
And what about in Kansas?
Somewhat different. We are $2,000 in Kansas. So, I make fun because each state can do its own thing, but it's pretty much the same. One can keep a house, one can keep a car, one can keep a funeral plan so long as it's irrevocable. One can have a cemetery lot, and one can have $1,000 in Missouri and $2,000 in Kansas. Now, there are a lot of little buzzes that I should stick in there, but that's the general premise.
Well, and adult children starting to take on this kind of advocate role for trying to plan finances for the parents can start to invade on some of this sense of privacy and autonomy. What any advice here on how to plan together to basically cover the costs of all this?
Education at the senior level and not education at the takeover children level. So at the Shepherd Center level, at the let's get more in the community and make our seniors feel more comfortable learning about their options. Less of the children coming in and saying, "Dad, you have gray hair. Give me your checkbook."
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We just have a couple minutes left. If you have a question, we might be able to fit you in. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. I also want to quickly get to estate planning and trusts, and that is an option for dealing with these decisions at end of life and distributing things appropriately so that we're not ending up in some mess as a family.
Well, here's where I have to tell you that I hope my parents aren't listening because they don't have a will. So, there are some, you can talk to people and then you can talk to people. They're going to do what they're going to do. Should everyone have a will? Absolutely. Should everyone have a trust? No. Is it right for everyone? That's a good conversation to have with your attorney, preferably an elder law attorney if you've reached a point where you're considering how are you paying for your long-term care. And this is a team approach. You often do need a geriatric care manager, a good financial planner. I don't sell stuff. I don't have insurance. I can refer you to people like there's just so many great resources in Kansas City. Benefits of Home is an agency that's a local one. Creative Care Consultants. There are people who are not lawyers, so are not as pricey, that will sit down with the family and say, let's figure out what your life plan is. How are you going to pay for this? How can we keep your dignity? You want to be at home? Let's see how we can make that work for you. Should you have, what are your basic instruments, though? It begs the question for me to just list them for you. I want a power of attorney. I want a separate one for finances, and I want a different one for healthcare. Not always the same people named, and not the same triggering events.
But that can get expensive in itself with all that.
So can not having them.
Right.
Yes, it can get expensive. Should you do it anyway? Yes. And should you inquire? Yes, you should.
I want to go quickly to Roger in Independence. Roger, welcome to Central Standard. Roger, are you
Hello?
With us? Yeah.
I am, thanks.
You've got about a minute here. Go on.
I just wanted to mention one of the things that I utilized with my elderly mother a few years ago was people who follow a vacation called geriatric care managers. I don't know if this is something that you've mentioned in this conversation so far.
Actually, just a moment ago we did.
Mm-hmm. I had the experience with geriatric care managers in town here with my mother who moved to town with Parkinson's disease. And the gal who I used, I'm even going to mention her name was Diane Blackler, was worth 10 times the very modest fee that this gal took, who immediately came in and on the very first day realized that my mother was over-medicating herself. And from everything from guiding me to attorneys who helped her with estate planning to being a go-between between myself and the both assisted living and skilled nursing facility she was in, not only was Diane fantastic, but the geriatric care managers that I had experienced with some other places. My mother moved here from New Jersey.
Roger, I'm sorry, we're running out of time. I appreciate you calling in.
Geriatric care managers are wonderful. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Just quickly, advice for children on ways that they too can receive support during this process, just some of the stress here.
Well, I think that what you're seeing is a new profession coming up, where it used to be that all the adult children were supposed to figure out all this, and now there are people who are specializing in that and definitely take advantage of them.
I would agree. That's the geriatric care managers, the American Companion Cares, the Creative Care Consultants. It's a new industry coming up, and I think elder law will grow, and some elder law firms are incorporating that into their companies.
We're out of time. I want to thank Deborah Smith, Associate Professor of Sociology at UMKC. She's the Director of Family Studies Program. Dr. John Didon, Program Director of the UMKC School of Medicine. Samantha Shepherd, an Attorney of Law at Shepherd Elder Law Group. Thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. Tune in tomorrow for Central Standard, Getting to Know Kansas City's Sudanese Population. Plus, favorite picks of the Midcoast Takeover as local musicians prepare to make their mark at South by Southwest. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and myself, executive producer Bill Anderson. Our intern is Claire McInerney. Up to date is next with the many firsts of Michelle Obama. I'm Suzanne Hogan, and this is Central Standard on KCUR. Enjoy the day.